Somebody brought up, this is Wes Waddell, by the way. Somebody brought up race relations in the church. Yesterday we had a little discussion about that. I don't know if it was, I guess it was recorded. But I just wanted to kind of get some input from you guys. I don't even know how to word the question, really. So I'm just going to throw out the topic there. It's been a hot topic for within the past year, just race relations within the church. Can you guys maybe articulate how we should approach it? How do you think we should approach it? Should we address it? Is it as big a problem as people say it is? Is it limited to specific locations?
We, as it relates to campus ministries, should we address it?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Who should we address it? Who's we?
I mean we as a campus ministry community. So I'll just throw that out there, and I'm sorry if I didn't word that very well, but just give me your thoughts on that, because this is something I'm wrestling with.
I think I know where you're addressing that from, and I'm kind of anxious to address that question, but I have a belief in this, and I think it's founded, matter of fact, I think I found it best in my fellow campus minister. Where is he? He went to the restroom. He's Aurelio. Aurelio is my fellow campus minister. The first minister I trained and planted, Orlando Henlon. Our ministry is very diverse in race. And someone asked me at Gulf Coast Getaway 4 or 5 years ago. We were at a meeting, and one of the campus ministers came up to me, and he said, "Man, Len, how in the world have you guys got so much diversity? How have you done this?" My mind went, okay, what's he talking about? Is he talking about because we got girls and guys? Is he talking? Honestly, that's where my mind went. I did not understand he was talking about race. I was like, what's he talking about? And then it hit me. He's talking about race. And that made me understand what the answer was. We'd never, ever, ever focus on race. We're the human race. Race doesn't exist in our group, in our organization. And someone will say, well, do you honor Martin Luther King's birthday? We don't talk about things that cause division. We talk about things that cause unity within us. We don't address race because race is not an issue with us. And I think you make it an issue by addressing it. When you address it, somebody's going to form an opinion and join on a side. And we don't want people forming an opinion and joining on sides. We want people to be united, saying, you know what, we're all equal at the foot of the cross, and God looks at us as the human race, not what color our skin happens to be.
I think Len, when he says not addressing it, I think he's saying address it probably from a biblical standpoint when he says that about the cross. And at the crossings, we live in an area that is growing rapidly because of white flight. That's why it's the way that it is. But you can come in our campus ministry with our church, and I think that one of the things is men, both this, and this is cut both ways. Whenever Darnell Singleton was our campus minister at Greater Alton, he's an African-American, we did the Klan started doing some stuff that was going on, and they were distributing leaflets. And so we did. I called Darnell and said, Darnell, we got to do something. It's these guys, that they're idiots, and we need to, you know, at least help, you know, let a Christian say that for a change. And so we did a Ban the Klan rally. Then when Louis Farrakhan, or Louis Imacon, as I like to call him, but when he came to SIU, Darnell stood up, and I want you to know, on both sides, I received death threats when we did the Ban the Klan from white people. It wasn't black people. Darnell was ostracized by the blacks when he stood up and said, "I think you're a racist," in the forum with Malcolm X, with Louis Farrakhan. The truth is, racism is a two-way street, and anybody who denies that is, you know, to deny it, you have to even redefine what racism is and start talking about things other than race and start talking about power. So there is a reality, there's a racism that goes the best way, but one of the things, that the way we combat is that by being genuinely people who refuse to be racist. And we can talk all we want to, but the reality is, until we embrace and love freely. I know a lot, you know, my children, Carrie and Ashley, my daughter and my son, both dated African Americans when they were in school. And with my mom, she was not very receptive to that, and so I had a talk with my mom that said, listen, if you want to mistreat Keon, then you're going to have to understand you will not see me or my children, because he is a follower of Christ, he is a disciple, And right now, he is the person that my daughter may marry. And I will not. So you make a decision whether or not you want to see your grandkids, because I won't allow this to go on. Now, guys, that stand, when Keon, and he found out about that, we had no problem with in Alton, which is predominantly black. We were the most protected white family in that city. And it wasn't because we did sermons, although we did sermons. I just finished a series on racism, and or a series called Hot Topics. And one of them was racism. And that's where we played the Dave Chappelle show that would get most, don't play. You know, it's the bizarre thing is it's not got any cussing in it at all, which he can't breathe without cussing. So I took that as a sign that it was from God that he wanted us to show. Now, the N-word is used about 70 times in 6 minutes. But guys, the point is, it was confronted. But I think is we've got to start. It's easy to say, oh, I'm not racist. But if your daughter starts dating somebody that's of African American, how do you feel about that? And you're never going to get people to believe that you don't care about skin if you've got ill will in your heart. So I think modeling is super important.
I believe we are to preach about it, teach about it, stand for it, build bridges. My Bible says there's no difference between Jew, Greek, male and female. Think about how much of the corpus of the New Testament is given to that issue. Acts 15, the book of Galatians, all through. Jesus, what he said about the Good Samaritan. Martin Luther King said the last place of segregation in our society is 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. That's a sin. I believe that one of the problems is that this is overly politicized, and there's a merger sort of between the religious right and the political right. God's not a Republican. The flip side of that, he's not a Democrat either. He's an independent. And the thing is, we've got to figure out how to get on his bandwagon and not to negotiate him onto ours. I believe that if we don't, I believe it's a huge problem in this country still. When about many years ago, I knew an elder. I could tell you his name in the congregation. His job as an elder was to stand in the lobby of a church, and if any African-Americans showed up, he was to give them directions to the African-American church. And so if you think Paul would be happy with the Jew church and the Gentile church in the first century, you know, I think you're crazy. I believe if we don't do this on our college campuses, we're not going to do it anywhere. That's a place to stop. To get people in tune with God's mission and God's vision. And the building bridges, we live in a culture where community's broken down. The home is not what it used to be. Schools are not what it used to be. Churches are not what they used to be real honest with you. And I believe we've got to be proactive about building bridges. And you know what? If we ignore it, you know what will happen? We will reach and appeal to people like us. I read a study recently of a sociologist that essentially typed who we are as a people. We're a white middle class group. And at the very least, would you agree with me, that is a red light on the dashboard that says there's a problem. I'm a part of a side door ministry that is a multi-ethnic focus. It's a martial arts ministry. And I want to tell you, there is tension between a side door ministry that is multi-ethnic in the Bible Belt South and a church, even a progressive church. And we have to somehow trust God, stand with God, and to move forward on that issue. And I would say the same thing for gender justice, and also socioeconomics.
And by the way, we assume that our people know, if you address this from the Bible perspective, we had a lady who had been a Christian for about 6 months. After my sermon, I didn't know what was going on. She went away. She told me later, she said, after that sermon, I went away for 2 hours and had to think. And I said, what do you mean? And it wasn't a debate whether, she goes, I grew up in a church that taught the races should be separate. And she said, so for 2 hours, I'm sitting, and she says, I was in shock that the Bible was so clear about this. And we weren't insulting anybody, guys. If you can take a very common sense approach, you cannot look at Scripture and come out being a racist. You cannot do that. But sometimes we're not proactive. You know, we don't have a racism problem per se in our church. We're one of those that when you come in, we have, you know, we're the place that the black people come, that they know that they can come in. The white people, if they're a mixed marriage, they know. They'll tell each other because, you know, you can go to that church and nobody will even notice. And it's a safe place for them. But still, we need, you know, just to be proactive and to create this spirit of unity and care, We're not addressing a need within the church. I'm addressing a need within the community, and I'm also affirming that this is what we're going to be. So I think there's nothing wrong, you know, with preaching. Is I do think that to preach it without modeling, it's a waste of time. And that comes back to personal heart and to where, you know, we love and we care as deeply for those guys. I remember walking into Carrie's room time one time whenever he's growing up, and there was a bunch of guys spending the night, and they're sleeping in their underwear, you know. And they're in there, and I'm looking, and I walk in, and it looked like, you remember the little game Barrel of Monkeys? And it was weird because there were black legs and white legs in their arms, and they were all, you know how, you know, 14-year-olds can sleep on with seven people on top of them, you know. And I remember just, and I called Rita to the room. I don't know if she remembers it. I opened the door, even though they were in their underwear. But I said, it was so cool for me to see this blending together to where you really, if it wasn't for the colors, they were just interlocked and interconnected. And for a person who grew up in a racist Southern Illinois kind of context, I was like, that's so cool. And that, our charge, our leading charge, I think helps that.
I just want to say, too, like, I understand that it's a serious issue. But we have fun with it, to be honest. Our other small group leader is black, his wife's white. One of our female leaders is a black girl. We give each other trouble all the time, and we understand. But we tease each other about our races, and I think sometimes we can get so uptight about it that it just makes things worse. And we get so, like, you know, scared of, oh, I don't want somebody to think I'm racist and blah, blah, blah. Juan can call me a honky and we can laugh about it all day long. And I'm just being honest with you. We have a great time together because I know Juan loves me and Juan knows that I love him. And we're not going to get all uptight about racial issues because of our love for each other and our love for Christ. And, man, I just think we can't take it so seriously that we get so freaked out that we're so afraid that we're going to upset somebody or we're so, you know, and just love each other and it takes care of itself.
Just to be clear, when I say that we don't address it, I'm talking about we don't address it from a point of view of trying to address the issue, trying to address the, trying to get into the fight. Obviously we address it or we wouldn't be diverse, but this is very difficult to explain because every time I get into this, I get an argument back from someone else. I got into it online with someone, get into an argument from this person about, well, you better honor Martin Luther King's birthday. You better do this or you won't have a diverse congregation. And I'm going, then why is it your congregation's all white and you're complaining about it and our congregation's diverse? We don't address it that way. We don't honor Martin Luther King's birthday. We don't honor anybody else's birthday. We don't honor my birthday, believe it or not. We just love each other and love Jesus Christ. And by doing that, everybody comes to the foot of the cross. Will our preacher preach on racism? Well, of course. Will we teach what the Bible teaches about it? Absolutely. So from that point of view, sure, we're addressing it. But from the other point of view, we are not going to cause division in the church because we start dealing with the issue and make people choose sides. And the older person in our congregation that's having a difficulty dealing with it, all of a sudden is forced to have to stand up and defend his side of it, which is ridiculous. We don't go there. We instead say we love everybody, and then we say it by exampling it. And that's why we're diverse.
I agree with everything that's been said. Figure that one out if you can. I have, for the last 16 years, been trying as a facilitator in a quiet way in our city to get the black churches and the white churches to walk together and to embrace each other as brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, we have some integration in some of our churches. It's minimal, but it is there, and it's been extremely difficult to bring the black churches on board. And one day I had a meeting with them, with a number of black ministers and pastors. No white men there other than me. And I said, why is it so difficult for you to participate? And I wasn't necessarily saying merge our churches. I was saying let's receive one another. And they gave three reasons, and you'll have to relate this to your campus if it relates at all. Number one, when you invite us to participate in an event, you don't bring us in on the ground floor. You come to us with the event and ask us to endorse it. And as we begin to think about that and respond to that, we concluded they're right. We come up with the ideas and the plan. We propose it to them and ask them to participate. The bottom line of that is many times they feel used, whether they'll tell us or not. The second thing was, you don't come to our activities. Now, one of the black pastors said, I know we're invited to your events, and some of us come to your events, but you never come to any of our events. Guilty on the second count. And I beg to differ with my brother, and this has nothing to do with our fellowship in Christ. The third thing they said is, you do not honor the contributions that Dr. Martin Luther King made. They said that is the main barrier. Now, did Dr. King put his pants on just like the rest of us do? Absolutely. Did he have mistakes in his life just like the rest of us have had? Absolutely. But brothers and sisters, whether you do it from the pulpit or not, that's your business, and you have to call that. We must come to the place of where we recognize the contribution and the significant contribution this man made to life in America. And until we do, there's going to be a barrier there. And I'm not, when I have preached, I'm not trying to make people comfortable. And I do challenge them. I don't think you throw, Mitt McKnight used to say, you don't throw gravel in their face every Sunday. But they must be challenged. There are things that they need to get over, just like there were things that I need to get over. And I believe as an instrument of change, measuring how and when I do it, I have to help them to get over it. And one of the things we got to get over is our silence about the leadership and the contribution of Dr. King. And when we do that, that will be a giant step in our cities and maybe even on our campuses. It's been difficult for me to start marching in the King Parade, but I've done it now for the last 4 or 5 years. And I've been one of very few white folks and white preachers in that parade. But it has opened unbelievable doors for me. I have now been appointed to the Martin Luther King Planning Committee to plan the events around his birthday. And it has opened many, many doors. You translate that.
I also want to say I really respect all the views represented here, and we can disagree and be brothers in Christ. And I've been thoroughly impressed with the whole panel, and everybody up here has a heart for God and wants to do the right thing. And I would say I want to agree with the fact that maybe we all ought to just loosen up a little bit and not take each other so seriously on the one hand. Like, I completely agree with that. But on the other hand, there's a good reason we don't throw the N-word around. Good reason we don't. And with ethnicity and race, sometimes if we completely ignore it, that sort of says your heritage is not important. And for some people, whether they, I think they're right about the Martin Luther King thing, for some people that's a very sacred part of their heritage. And in my opinion, if we just pick that out and say we're not going to do it, that could be offensive to some people. Even though it's not meant that way, it could be. And let me point the finger at myself right here. Isn't it interesting, though, that there are 5 white guys up here talking about this issue? And I would say if we really want to know, we ought to be diverse on this panel. And we ought to, if we want to know what the typical African American feels, if there is such a thing, that's like saying the typical white person, let's ask them and get that meaningful input. And if we are going to stand for oneness in Jesus, that's got to be represented in our leadership, in our structure, in our worship, in everything we do. We cannot have people come and sit not at the back of a bus, but at the back of a church auditorium.
I think I agree, but I think sometimes it goes down to, are we disciples? And again, I do believe that the cure for racism is not legislation or social activism. It's Jesus in our hearts and discipleship. I also think that the idea that we have, that guys, our heritage, while there's obviously it means a lot to us, but there's, you know, we're growing with a Hispanic population. There's all kinds, you know, and we're going to be more and more diverse to where at some point we're going to, the message of Christ has to transcend all of that. And I think that's the key is what our two churches and our, you know, probably more racial diverse than most. I think Greater Alton is maybe less than it used to be. But the truth is, the reason that happened is because people, you know, walked a life of love for all people. And whether you march in the parade or not, I would maybe go, okay, I think that could be significant in some ways, but it's not as important as marching every day in love for the people around them. So, and I'm not disagreeing with him, because we did the Ban the Klan stuff, and quite frankly, on that day, we had about 400 people there, and there was about 350 blacks and about 50 whites. Not one white Greek member of a fraternity in the entire campus came that day. Okay, so anyway.
Thank you, guys. We're out of time. That was a great discussion, and I'll look forward to the feedback we get after we post that on the internet and other people get to hear it.